Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to another installment of Let's Weekend. I am your host from the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Saloji. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so you're probably wondering, hey, you know, the holidays were over by last week. What happened? Well, we'll be getting to that. Just suffice it to say that we had issues that had to be dealt with that prevented us from recording. We'll probably be getting into that a little. Just let you know, everybody's fine. But outside of that, what have we got to talk about this week? Well, among other things, and this is probably one you definitely know because you've already seen it just about freaking everywhere. The very first Mickey Mouse sound cartoon, Steamboat Willie, is now officially in the public domain. A lot of people don't know. It's not actually the first Mickey Mouse cartoon. It's the first Mickey Mouse cartoon with sound, which is the big deal there. But yeah, it's in the public domain now, which means because of that, we now have a crap ton of plans for cheap-ass Steam ripoff games and cheesy Z-grade horror movies and just a bunch of whole other shit. But on top of that, we also got this really shocking news out of Jackson, Mississippi. We also got some more news about former President Trump's financial situation, specifically his financial relations to a couple of different foreign governments. We got some more political shenanigans to talk about. And oh yeah, there was an airplane up in the sky whose door literally just blew off of it, like in mid-flight. It's kind of terrifying. And we're going to talk about that because that little story is going to lead you down into a really weird rabbit hole of just corporate malfeasance. And then, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment-related stuff, including some trailers and some announcements of stuff and where it's going to be streaming and all that and that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off. Chris, how about you tell us a little bit about the just kind of harrowing ordeal you had to deal with last week?
I don't think there was anything really harrowing about it, but I was at work and got a...
Yeah, just before we start, just so you know, it sounds worse than it actually was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was at work and got a text that basically said there's an active fire at a building that's attached to mine in my apartment complex.
Yeah.
I think like a U-shaped setup of two horizontal buildings and two vertical ones.
Yep.
It was on the right horizontal or right vertical building. Mm-hmm. I'm in the left horizontal, right next to the left vertical one. And so that's all I had for 5 hours until I could leave work.
Yeah.
And that was like, well, this sounds, I would assume if it was bad, there would be more.
Yeah.
So I got back, saw that like the firefighters were leaving, the last ones that I saw were leaving, and I like just asked him like what's going on and all that, and he was like, oh, you know we're done.
Yeah,
go and talk to the people in the office, need anything. And I went over and didn't see anybody and just decided to be like look around a bit, and they had everything roped off. And when I was like, all right, I don't think there's any way I can do anything here. And kind of just immediately went over to my parents and told them what was going on. Got a text like essentially about 6 hours later from the original text, basically like, we'll send you more info, you know, for everybody involved here in a little bit. And then that was like an hour later that I got an email with a bunch of details basically saying the building that the fire originated in, basically done, probably not livable for the foreseeable future. The one next to it's also heavily damaged, basically saying like, all right, none of the people in these buildings, at least the three or I think just the three of them are shut down for the time being. Nobody's able to, you know, return to them or anything for a while. But saying that maybe Monday we'll start being able to get people back in that have places that have, you know, little to no smoke damage or anything.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's a weekend. That's fine. I can deal with that. But Monday comes around and get a notice that, okay, so still going to be down for the time being, but Tuesday we'll let people get in and get stuff that were unable to do so before, because I wasn't there, so I wasn't able to like do any sort of grab and go for anything if I was at my place at the time. So managed to make arrangements to get out of work and all that to go and deal with this. And they made us sign affidavits, like, you know, if you hurt yourself in the process of doing this, you know, we're not held responsible for this. But managed to get, you know, as you can probably guess, my PC and stuff that I can do, like a podcast and other things with, out of there, some consoles and clothes and that kind of stuff. Kind of left everything else, but from what I could tell, my place seemed perfectly fine. Just the smell of there being nobody living there for like 5 days at that point. No electricity. So probably most of the stuff in my fridge and freezer are in bad shape whenever. Outside of, you know, condiments and dressing and that kind of stuff that will be fine at whatever temperatures. But that'll be fun to deal with. So that'll be like the main thing I lose out on is food, and especially because I just got groceries on the Thursday, the day before the fire happened. So it's like, okay, I wasted money on that, but that's why you have renter's insurance, that kind of stuff. Probably be here at my parents' for a few weeks. We'll see how quickly you can go back, but also kind of encapsulating this, having a couple of packages in the process of being delivered and seeing the weird ways that FedEx decided to seemingly try to deliver it and delay it every time instead of taking it to the office, which UPS took the one package of mine they did have to the office immediately. That was weird. So I had to sign up for a FedEx account, tell them like, just hold it at one of these locations. So I managed to do that yesterday, but yeah, that's kind of the whole thing. Seems like everybody got out okay. Nothing lost, but, you know, rental property and personal property of the people in the buildings that were affected most, which sucks, but yeah, they're going to be okay, hopefully, with all the renter's insurance and all that. So that's kind of the gist of everything that's going on. So yeah, me, I'm just slightly inconvenienced for a bit. And I'm not paying, you know, rent and electricity for a bit, so I need to call my cable company and tell them to fuck off for the next month or whatever.
So, question, did they ever determine what caused the fire?
Not that I know of, but it seems like the assumption is likely some electrical issue that happened. And, you know, as a result, electrical boxes will have to be replaced in the buildings so people can, you know, use them.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So that'll be, but yeah, that's the basic gist of what went on.
Okay. Well, outside of that shit, what else have you been up to?
Yeah. Been trying to keep myself entertained while, you know, stressing out about, you know, the status of my place. So I've been watching some things. I finished up Yu Yu Hakusho on Netflix. Which basically ends with the conclusion of the Toguro stuff in a weird way that I don't know if there's going to be a season two of this. Or at least, you know, there's not. I guess there's probably like the whatever stuff's late in the anime, but there's not a ton. They kind of skip over the entire tournament, thing, which is something they probably should have left the Toguro stuff on like a cliffhanger as they do in the anime. Where you kind of finish off the first big confrontation and he tells them, you know, you need to meet me at the dark tournament where we'll fight properly and, you know, or else he's going to kill them all. And they don't do that. They just kind of skip to, you know, taking out a bunch of people having a couple of fights there, all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. it's pretty solid, pretty well done. But yeah, kind of the way they took a hacking to the general story is kind of leaving a lot to be desired for like what a second season would be. And I'm not mm-hmm. familiar with the manga to know how much other stuff there is in that wasn't in yeah. the anime, but what was there was pretty solid. Mm. And yeah, the other show I've been watching a bunch of is Komi Can't Communicate, an anime that's on Netflix that mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool show about a girl named Komi who has extreme social anxiety, mm-hmm. Like more of like a social phobia of sorts. And she meets one of the main character of the show, mm-hmm. Tadano, who ends up befriending her and sort of wanting to help her out with this phobia mm-hmm. of hers and help her communicate better, you know, like the name of the show is sort of all about. And yeah, I'm near the end of the first season. I don't know if there is a second season, but what's there? I'm nearly at the end as she's, you know, making more friends, dealing with weird. So that's been pretty fun. And yeah, the only other show I've been really watching of notes that's new is, was it Pokemon Concierge? That mm-hmm. I forgot to put on here. The stop motion Pokemon show that is in on Netflix about a girl named Haru who goes to this Pokemon resort for her new job as she's gone through some stuff and decides to do this for her next big thing, which involves this Pokemon resort where she's essentially helping the Pokemon and sometimes trainers that come with them to either help Pokemon relax, figure out, you know, a way for them to deal with issues they have, that kind of stuff. Like one of them dealing with this Pikachu that has seemingly some like anxiety fears of sorts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the trainer is very much sort of concerned because, you know, the Pikachu is not like a normal Pikachu as far as, you know, being energetic and loud and all that. And so kind of having a hell of a time kind of trying to get through to the Pikachu and figure out like what may help them become maybe more what they think they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe also dealing with the concept of they don't have to be like the. But, yeah, pretty good show. I think I've finished up all the ones they have up right now. I think they're just putting up new episodes every week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been pretty much all I've been watching. For games, I've been playing a bunch of American Truck Simulator, working on one of their events. They had a holiday Christmas Winterland event where you're delivering trailers full of goods to the Winter Wonderland map, which is a pretty cool sort of snow-filled map that is unique because, you know, they don't have snow in any other parts of the world. There's not really weather or anything. So
mm-hmm.
This is a fun little map of snow-covered roads and even some frozen lakes that look really nice to get on. So for that event, you needed to deliver stuff to or from one of the five areas in the Christmas Winterland area, so
mm-hmm.
That's wasn't too bad. I just did about two a day on my Steam Deck for that, so now I just have left the Cruising Kansas event, where essentially delivering stuff to or from all of the cities in the Kansas map, which I think is 14 here, which they just extended the deadlines for that stuff to
mm-hmm.
February 5th. So people had a little more time to do them because they realized they had a bunch of stuff, you know, these two events overlapping in a way that may be a lot for people to try to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I'll be working on here over the next couple of weeks, but that's been fun. The other stuff I've been playing is some more Vampire Survivors clones that are on the PS5, Spirit mm-hmm. Hunters Infinite Horde, which I am... I put a lot of time into at this point. Really liking it. It has a lot of interesting kind of wrinkles to it compared to Vampire Survivors, where that is kind of where you're just trying to figure out what to do to unlock things. They have a long list of stuff, and it can be hard to keep track of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But here they kind of they give you that option, just picking maps and characters and that, but you can also pick the starting weapon independently. Mm-hmm. The different characters might have a different buff to those weapons, depending on who you pick. But they also have these things called ledgers, which are essentially build challenges of where they give you, you know, up to 5 weapons and pets. Pets are kind of they follow you around, like buff stats or, you know, give you other abilities, that kind of stuff to them. But they give you some mix of stats to or weapons to upgrade, pets to upgrade, or pets or weapons that you cannot use for that run.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to survive a whole run with that, which has not been too hard, but they throw in hard, and they have a brutal mode difficulty that I have not unlocked yet, but kind of just working my way through. This is the game that has a huge skill tree to work your way through, and trying to keep track of all the requirements for different things, because there's some of these that require you to kill X amount of certain enemies that may only show up on a map in its hard mode, which they do list on there, but they don't necessarily make that easily trackable for when you're picking out maps. So I end up trying to look and see if there's ledgers that go on those maps, that kind of stuff for that. But yeah, that's been fun for what I've been doing. And the other one I've been playing is Army of Ruin. Mm-hmm. This is more of a straightforward Vampire Survivors clone, but with 3D character models and maps that you're looking on from a top-down perspective, but otherwise has a lot of the same kind of weapons and such, though it's not nearly as goofy as Vampire Survivors is.
Mm-hmm.
With all of its stuff. So that's maybe the one knock I have, but it has the same kind of thing with the when you're upgrading stats, that's you pick one and the prices for the others go up as you go, that kind of stuff. But they limit it to things in the row on the list, on the way that they list all these things, so you don't necessarily affect everything that is available. But it's also a game that slowly rolls out different features and such as you go, as you play more of it. So like I just unlocked the map feature, which is not like Vampire Survivors map.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a weird thing. It'll show stuff on it if you see like icons, you know, hanging around the corners of the screen kind of stuff, but it's not like Vampire Survivors where it shows you like, here's the 4 big like pickups you can get on this map. And so you kind of watch and then see if there's, you know, power-ups that are dropped by enemies, that kind of stuff. But here it's kind of, it's also tracking where you've been, so you can kind of see the path you've gone. Especially at the end of a run, it'll show you, you know, lines moving around, showing you like how you went around the map kind of stuff. And that's pretty nice. But yeah, it's kind of got a lot to it. It also has challenges to it that are special ones, like one that requires you to beat a certain map win a certain map without ever moving, mm-hmm. Which is a weird challenge, but I have not unlocked whatever special characters or whatever that I need to actually do that. The ones I started with don't have anything great for dealing with that. So yeah, mm-hmm. That I'm just getting started in a few hours in, so still get my feet wet on that. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So Brennan, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I among other things, I got a new phone for Christmas. It's the latest iPhone model. A lot of people don't know this, but up until December, I was essentially using a really old iPhone SE model. and it was getting to the point where like the battery power was getting really unstable, and it kept like getting like Reddit or whatever, or browsing Reddit or whatever on that thing would just drain the battery so fast. So eventually I was like, I got to get a new one. So I got a new one, and it's good. Definitely has better battery power and definitely lasts longer than the old one did. But yeah, But as far as like gaming is concerned, well, amongst other things, I had started playing using my my Nintendo Online thing subscription. I decided to play some old Sega Genesis games because I was not as a Sega kid when I was a kid. I was a Nintendo kid, so I did not own a Sega console until the Dreamcast, and well, we know how long that lasted. So I started playing Pulse Man, and Pulse Man is kind of a like old, it's an old Game Freak joint, like years before they made Pokemon. Like you play it, and like you can definitely see like the Game Freak, style all over it. Like you can definitely, all the character and enemy design is straight from Ken Sugimori's art style. The music is, the music, much like pretty much everything else Game Freak has put out, was largely done by Junichi Masuda. And like, you can almost hear like traces of what would eventually become Pokemon theme music in bits and pieces of it. And the thing is, when you play this game, it's like really easy at first to try and compare it to like Mega Man, because of like sort of like the backstory kind of sounds Mega Man-ish, but it doesn't really play like that. And then when you start to play it, you almost want to play it like a Sonic game, because speed and like building up static electricity is actually like a big part of the gameplay. But you do not want to do that with this. You will die very quickly. So you have to be very careful. But basically, the way that the game works is that you're playing this superhero named Pulse Man, and you're trying to go after this evil scientist. And you're basically going like all over the world in various places. And it's like a kind of vaguely cyberpunk-esque future. Because, it's Japan, this is the 90s, and that's what everything was. And the sort of conceit of this is that Pulse Man essentially has power over both electricity and electrical currents, which means, amongst other things, he can sort of transform himself into an electrical current and you go about, travel on like wires. Essentially, like pathways of wires, and he can also transport himself into like televisions, into sort of like a digital dimension. He can also like kick and like use electricity as a weapon. His standard electricity weapon is like a sort of like a short blast, but if you build up enough static electricity when running or dashing, you can turn it into like a projectile attack. And I will say this about this game. First of all, it's actually pretty fun, still really solid, still really holds up, even though there are parts of it that are just, it's like, wow, they really just, somebody dropped something at some point, because this is some shit that would require hard, hard drugs to conceive of. And the other thing I would say is, if you have any type of risk towards some sort of like sensory, seizures, stuff like that, don't try to play this game, because there is a lot of flashes, and even I, who have never had any type of history of that kind of thing, I started getting a headache after playing this game a little while, because there are parts of it where it is just, the flashing is crazy, crazy. In particular, there's like this casino level where the background is constantly flashing like reds and yellows and blues and purples, just primary colors nonstop. And even it was starting to get to me. But when I was playing that, I was realizing, you know what? This is a pretty solid game, and Game Freak is a pretty solid game developer. And yet, they've primarily been playing Pokemon, and it's been almost over a decade since I've played a Pokemon game, and letting you know it, there's a recent Pokemon game that's on the Switch right now, so I went and purchased Pokemon Scarlet. Now, I had been told, I was warned ahead of time, and I knew it, that this game was kind of glitchy and kind of buggy, and definitely was more ambitious than, you know, could contain what it actually ended up being. But I will say, in spite of all that, yeah, it's still a really solid Pokemon game. Unlike pretty much any other Pokemon game, this is the first Pokemon game I've encountered where the story is actually, like, interesting. Like, I mean, we're not talking, you know, the Great American Novel or anything, but it's actually vaguely interesting. Like, I actually kind of want to see how this plot goes forward. I will say this, though. You know what's... And I'd heard about this before I played it, but it is strange how you can go a pretty far way into this game and almost never see any of the major Pokemon that people are familiar with. I have not seen a single Pikachu the entire time I've played this game. Like, nowhere. Not even a Pichu or a Raichu or anything related. I've seen, like, a Growlithe, and I've seen Diglets, and I even have a Meowth in my database, but I have not seen a single Pikachu the entire time. I even just fought, like, the gym where, you know, the gym leader whose entire, like, group basis was, you know, electric lightning Pokemon. No Pikachu to be seen. Not a single one. But, still, a lot of fun, very fun. And finally, on top of that, you know, I figured, you know, it's after Christmas, got a bunch of money and shit, and I got my bonus from work and everything. You know what? I might as well go ahead and buy the new Mario game. So I went and bought Super Mario Wonder as well. And I'd already played a bunch of it beforehand, but this one is a copy I actually owned. I do have to say, the thing about that game that amazes me is how Nintendo somehow manages to somehow keep reinventing the wheel, like, over and over again, and somehow knocking it out of the park every time. Because this game takes, like, the basic sort of 2.5D Mario game and gives it some really amazing twists on it. Obviously, you've got, like, the Wonder Seeds and everything, the Wonder Flowers, and how they'll basically change up the entire landscape and make it do really crazy and weird things, from, like, making pipes turn into worms, or, you know, changing the form of the character you're playing. Sometimes you'll turn into, like, a Goomba. Sometimes that'll happen. Just all this weird stuff. And it's amazing how they've managed to keep that franchise relevant and so much fun. And also how they absolutely 100% know what they're doing, because it is very hard to not play this game and not try to make jokes about drug use that have been docking the Mario franchise since the beginning. Because there is some wacky shit that goes down in this game that is just crazy, crazy, crazy. But yeah, so also love playing that as well. But that's it for gaming. As for other stuff, so everybody knows I'm a huge fan of Has-Been Hotel, and I've been patiently waiting for its final debut. And it actually debuts for real next week, on Friday, on Amazon Prime. But I was one of those crazy people who paid a little money so I could get pre-release access to the first two episodes. And I will just say, they pretty much exceeded my expectations. The production values are great. The animation is great. The writing is good. The music is fantastic, which is good because, you know, it's largely a musical. So it's got to be, you got to hope that the music is really solid. And it is. I'm not going to, you know, spoil anything, because I want everyone to have a chance to watch the series for the first time who have not had access to. I will say it's not a retread of the pilot. The pilot that you see on YouTube is still very much canon. And yeah, it basically like roughly takes place like a month afterward. Not a month. That's wrong. A week, roughly a week afterwards. Yeah, it's you're gonna you're definitely going to enjoy what you see. But other than that, just music as usual. That's always a big thing. I started listening to Supercell again, which Supercell, those you don't know, they're a Japanese J-pop group that's made up of, I think, like a dozen people, where one of them is Ryo, who's the writer and composer, and all the others are like a bunch of artists and illustrators who do like promotion material. Supercell is basically famous for giving the world more or less, well, I say giving the world. They didn't literally create her because, she was created by a company, but they basically are the ones who made Hatsune Miku famous by using her voice for a bunch of songs that ended up becoming super popular. They use like actual vocalists now, and yeah, it's really solid. If you like J-pop, and I do love me some J-pop, you're definitely gonna love Supercell. And other than that, I'm just freaking happy as hell that the holidays are over. I love the holidays. I love Christmas, but I'm very happy when it's over because it's just so much preparation for what's basically a few days, and then boom, it's all gone. Just a lot of hectic activity, and then it just kind of goes poof, and everything goes back to normal. But yeah, that's basically what I've been doing. Chris, you want to add anything in else before we move on?
Nope.
Nope. Okay then. Well, in that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's random factoid. And Chris, you like ba do you like bad movies? Like so bad it's good movies?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. You kind of do have to be like in the right headspace to enjoy some of those movies. Because there's like two types of so bad it's good movies. There's so bad it's good movies where it all definitely like measures up to the hype, because of how terrible they are and how just how flagrantly, out of their league that the filmmakers and actors are when watching the movie and how obvious it is. Ed Wood's movies are a lot like this. The Room is a lot like this. And then there are also the movies that are so bad they're good in the way that they're hyped up. Because, like, for example, have you ever tried to watch Manos, the Hand of Fate?
Yeah, I watched the Mystery Science Theater version of it.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only way you can really watch that movie without just straight up.
Because it seemed like a very boring movie
It
otherwise.
is passing out from boredom. Yeah, like that movie is notorious for its terrible production quality and just overall shitty story and everything. It's also just really boring to watch. And yeah, compare it to something like, say, Troll 2, where the weird shit is just constantly in your face, that it's like it's one of those movies like, yeah, I can definitely watch this for fun.
Especially when it's not named appropriately.
Yeah, because there are no trolls to be found in that
Yeah,
movie.
that's the hook of the plot.
Yeah. They are all goblins.
Yeah.
And by the way, fun fact about that, there was a documentary made about that movie a while back where they got up with the guy who plays the dad in that movie. He's like a dentist. And like it's just good stuff. But yeah, I wanted to talk about one of those like so bad it's good movies, because one thing, it's actually a fairly recent one, even though it was supposed to like come out over 20 years ago, but it didn't come out until like a little over 10 years ago. It's so bad it's good, in the fact that it's one of the it's just the whole story of it is a hell of a rabbit hole. So the movie I'm talking about this week is a movie you've probably seen or heard about called Food Fight. Food Fight is an animated film that came out in 2012. It was directed and produced by a guy named Lawrence Kasdanov, and Lawrence Kasdanov himself is a bit of a odd figure, and I'll talk about him in a second. But basically, Food Fight is one of those movies that came out that went into production right around after the success of Toy Story. when Toy Story came out in, what year did that movie come out? I think it was like 1996. No, it was 1995. When that movie came out in 1995, it basically turned the entire animation and film world upside down, because it was the first commercially viable 3D animated film. And it made a boatload of cash. It is one of the most profitable animated films of all time. And for good reason, you know, even though the technology has definitely marched on, it still mostly holds up as a really good movie. And it pretty much put the Pixar brand on the map. And it also more or less kind of created the Pixar formula for a long time. And also the formula of like what a lot of these types of, you know, coattail writers would try to do, where they would try to create the secret life of things. You know, with Toy Story, it was the secret life of toys. And then you would have other movies where it's like, it's the secret life of animals, or it's the secret life of weather, or secret life of robots, or whatever, stuff like that. Food Fight was sort of a movie that came out, well, that was in production, was sort of the same idea. The idea was to have a film about the secret life of supermarket products, specifically the mascots of those products. And it took place in a grocery store that was called Marketropolis, which for some reason is completely owned and ran by just one single old guy, which as somebody who works in a grocery store, that's probably the most unbelievable part of this entire movie, believe it or not. And at night, when the lights go down, the supermarket transforms into a metropolis that's populated by all the various individuals and mascots representing their various brands. So some of the famous brand characters that you'll see show up include Charlie the Tuna, the Twinkie the Kid, the Vlasic Pickles, is he a seagull or a pelican? I can't remember. Mrs. Butterworth, Mr. Clean. And if you look at the like cover art for this movie, you would think they're the stars of the show. They're not. They barely show up at all in any of these movies. They're at best, they're throwaways. There's also a bunch of characters that are like, you can tell, like, because like midway through this film's production, a bunch of like the original like corporate backers backed out of the movie, so they ended up having to like come up with vague sort of XP versions of them. Like, there's this one that's like a potato pirate guy who's supposed to be like Captain Crunch. There's another that's supposed to be like the Keebler elves, you know, stuff like that. But the actual like plot of the movie is that there's like this cereal mascot who's like name I think his name is Dex Dog Detective, who's literally a dog detective voiced by Charlie Sheen, about to propose to his girlfriend Sunshine Goodness, who's like this cat girl that is like the mascot for like a raisin brand. And then she goes missing, and then 6 months later, a representative from a company called Brand X starts aggressively pushing their range of generic products to the store manager. And you know, generic brands in this case, it's like you go to like a, say, you know, Walmart and you get like Great Value, or go to Kroger, you know, stuff like that. And then the actual like Marketropolis market, the character of Lady X suddenly shows up, who's like a femme fatale type character. And then slowly but surely, Brand X sort of tries to take over Marketropolis by replacing all the other icons with their generic products. And I don't really need to tell the rest of the story. It's really, really stupid. But what's really funny is like all these major voice actors and voice talent they managed to rope into this thing. I mentioned Charlie Sheen. They also got Wayne Brady, Hilary Duff, Ava Longoria, Christopher Lloyd, Chris Kattan, Ed Asner, Jerry Stiller, just a bunch of people into this movie. And the whole story about like how this movie even came to existence, got made, is just It's crazy. So I mentioned Lawrence Kasdanov. So Lawrence Kasdanov is a longtime studio executive and film producer who's been active in the industry at least since the mid-80s. And if you've encountered anything that this guy has worked on, you've probably most experienced it with all of the work he's done with the Mortal Kombat film franchise. Chris, you've seen the original Mortal Kombat movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He was the producer for that movie. And I'm guessing you've also seen Mortal Kombat Annihilation, the sequel?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he was both the producer and he helped write the screenplay for it. So, already a good sign, right? he also produced Mortal Kombat The Journey Begins, which was that animated home direct-to-video disaster that had both 2D and 3D animation. I remember because I got a copy of it when I was a kid. He also was the director for the Mortal Kombat Live Tour, which was a thing that happened in the late 90s. Oh, and he also produced that Beowulf movie that came out in 1999. But yeah, that's more or less like the majority. Oh yeah, he did like was an executive producer on the most recent Mortal Kombat movie, the one that came out in 2021. That was actually like kind of good. Yeah, he did like do the executive production like that. Oh yeah, and he was also producer on the Bobbleheads movie. Which, yeah, whatever. But this movie, okay, so he ended up co-founding a company called Threshold Entertainment, which had a bunch of like animation subsidiaries related to like the Marvel superheroes, Bob the Builder, Lego Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Out, a bunch of stuff like that. And they do like animation and like practical and, you know, after effects and stuff like that. But right around the late 90s, after Toy Story sort of took off as this huge thing, he decided it would be a neat idea to like make a movie based around this whole idea of what if all the brand characters from supermarket products came to life? And so, you know, he decided to go into this. What at the time, keep in mind, Pixar's Toy Story, that movie was, you know, the whole like computer animation field was still sort of in its primacy at that time. And, you know, he went into this thinking it was going to be like any other film endeavor. People who did interviews after the film finally came out talked about how he didn't really understand how animation actually worked. And he would give like these very vague directions about how things should work in a, you know, in an animated film. You know, things were sort of going along at a fairly even clip, more or less. And there's actually like originally they had plans to release the film in like 2003. And they, you know, it looked like it was going to happen. Well, I said that eventually they did have to kind of like push it back to 2005 and 2007, but those also got missed. And then it turned out they eventually revealed why it was that the films missed those dates. Sometime around 2000, 2001-ish, somebody managed to break into Threshold Entertainment's studio property and stole all the files off of the computers that contained all the assets for the film. Yeah, it was like in 2002. Their studio was like located in America, and the hard drives basically all from all the unfinished assets had eventually been stolen. Uh-huh. Or at least that's the excuse they gave. The U.S. Secret Service apparently got involved to try and investigate. They were never really able to find anybody who might have been involved with it. There actually is like a sort of like a trailer or sort of a trailer that you can see on YouTube with how the movie was originally supposed to look. And it had a much more like squash and stretch animation style to it. But after 2004, they decided to change to a style more centered on motion capture. And here's the thing. I don't know if you've ever seen like what motion capture stuff looked like back in the early 2000s. It didn't look good. And so because of that, if you watch the film now and you watch it, you will notice basically almost every character in this movie barely emotes at all. Like, it's all, everybody looks dead, bug-eyed corpses. There's barely any, you know, eye movement, or there's parts where it's like, you're questioning, is the character supposed to be like blind or something? Because they're obviously talking to each other, but this person is just looking just off to the left for some reason. There's like parts where like the layers are screwed up and like small objects that are supposed to be in the distance end up accidentally overlaying with the foreground. Because it's all based around the still sort of not entirely advanced, you know, technology of motion capture, there's a lot of like crazy arm movements and stuff meant to convey emotions that just come off completely crazy. Also there's the fact that just in general, there's a bunch of parts of this movies that are clearly are not finished. There's like, you know, like city skyline scenes where you're supposed to look at what are supposed to be like cars or whatever are moving, but it's just like generic geometric shapes and squares and rectangles just kind of floating everywhere. And there's also like places where they like they're clearly like recycling animation or voices or stuff like voice lines, stuff like that. And there's also just the weird shit with lighting. Like, so like there's this one character called Cheezle the Weasel, who oddly enough is like voiced by Lawrence Kasdan himself, who's supposed to be like this sort of like sleazy weaselly character who's like trying to sell you stuff under his coat. But because of the way he's textured and the way the lighting is on him, he always looks like he's made of feces or whatever. I've heard people call him the shit weasel or the poop rat or whatever for some reason. And it's crazy. You could actually watch like the whole movie if you want on YouTube. It's on there. This movie is considered to be one of the biggest like box office bombs of all time. Are you ready for how much this movie costs? Are you ready?
Sure.
It cost between $45 to $65 million to make. You know how much money it pulled in at the box office?
Hundreds of thousands.
Nope, just a little under $74,000. That's bad. And yeah, so if you want, you can watch the whole movie on YouTube, or you can watch like the myriad of like YouTube critics who've done reviews on it. You know, the Nostalgia Critic did a really good one. John Tron did one as well, like a short time before it. There's a bunch of it, and it's amazing to see just how terrible. It's like everything that could go wrong in making an animated film of this caliber going wrong. And believe it or not, there was merchandise made for this movie, but because of how terrible the movie was, they were overstocked on all of it, so they ended up having to like offload it on like a bunch of like crane games and stuff in like supermarkets. So if you're on the lookout, it's possible you'll find something related to this movie in one of those places. But yeah, that is Food Fight, one of the worst films ever made, arguably the worst animated film ever made. And that's saying something. And that's another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So with that out of the way, it's now time for the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first assholes of the week are the assholes who ran this jail in Jackson, Mississippi, because it was discovered that there was I'm guessing this was like a mass grave situation where they found like 215 people that had been buried in a field near the place since 2016 without notifying any of their families.
Yeah, this is a wild thing that's been going on. Yeah, next to Hinds County Penal Farm near Jackson, Mississippi, are calling for a federal investigation, the families are, into the burials, which took place without families being notified. With their attorney now saying the field holds hundreds more graves. Families want a full accounting of the bodies buried there. And this sort of became national news last fall when several families said they waited months to hear about their missing loved ones, only to learn their relative had died months earlier and were buried in a grassy field. The graves marked only by a metal tag bearing a number. Their attorney, civil rights lawyer Ben Crump, says he believes many more people were buried under similar circumstances. Which is some real scummy shit to pull. Versus, you know, notifying the families and, like, letting them take the bodies. And, like, that being probably a cheaper way to go than just burying them. I don't know. But, yeah, this is kind of... Very much you can tell this is, like, a jail that the people running it do not really give a shit. They think they're out in the middle of nowhere and get away with whatever. It seems like, it's just... some wild shit. And the people involved in this really deserve to deal with the full extent of the law of, you know, mishandling bodies.
I mean, that is some crazy shit right there. And that is, like, definitely one of the things. Remember, the thing about jails is that they're basically run by, like, the county sheriff's department. And the thing about sheriffs in the U.S. is that there are sheriffs here in the U.S. that run their counties like their own personal fiefdoms. And this sounds like one of those situations where, you know, the sheriff just said, fuck it, throw them in the dirt, you know. But yeah. And the other asshole of the week, well, we found out recently that former President Donald J. Trump's companies accepted more than $7.8 million in payments from at least 20 different foreign governments, the largest of which, it turned out, was, you guessed it, China.
It's like, huh, this sounds familiar. Like the whole hubbub around Hillary in the 20s, where the Clinton organization was... caught up in a couple of scandals around accepting some money through, like, their Canadian branch that kind of led to those things not being reported properly. But this seems a step above that by a good margin, especially because he was in office, 2 years, during 2 years of his presidential term. This all was happening, which is like, oh, this seems extremely illegal. As it says here, it is illegal for presidents to accept any money from foreign governments without congressional approval per Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution, which states no person holding any office shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any except of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. At least 20 foreign governments or state-controlled businesses paid Trump-owned businesses during his presidency. See, the evidence consists primarily of thousands of Trump's business records obtained from his longtime accounting firm, Mazars USA, which were obtained after a years-long legal battle, which ultimately was decided by the Supreme Court. And so, this just kind of deals with the weird mishmash of his business relationships that never really got untangled as he went into office, that led to a lot of people being, you know, concerned about how that stuff would affect the way he does business, both intentionally and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, this very much seems like more information of how that stuff went along that should be held, that should be held. So yeah, I don't know how much more is going to be able to be done about this, but it seems like just more stuff that should get people off the idea that he should be allowed to run for office. So yeah, there you go.
But we do have some heroes of the week, and one of them is Mr. Don Scott, who became the first black speaker in the history of Virginia's legislature.
400-year history. He is the first, which is good to see. He was unanimously elected as House Speaker on Wednesday, with the Democrats in control of both parts of their assembly. So that's good news. He began his term as leader of the House here the other day. So that's great to see. And he's a former Navy vet and lawyer representing the southeastern Virginia city of Portsmouth. Quickly distinguished himself in the Democratic caucus, in part thanks to his unconventional path to the state house. So, yeah, been doing a lot of work for a good long time now. So hopefully he's ready to do some good things over in Virginia as they try to get rid of their shitty governor.
But with that, we'll now move on to the proper show proper. And the first story we got tonight is one that you probably already guessed, but still kind of sucks. Yeah, 2023 is officially the hottest year on record, and it wasn't even close.
Let's see here. The global average temperature in 2023 was significantly warmer by nearly 3/10 of a degree Fahrenheit than the previous warmest year, according to measurements released Friday by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as NASA. The EU measurements released earlier this week also. But yeah, what's the hottest? Let's see if details here. Yeah, they're showing the graph of this. And yeah, it is a good bit higher than on here. Yeah, this only goes back to about 175 years ago when there were reliable measurements of the Earth's temperature for that. But yeah, they can also use like tree rings, soil, polar ice, and other methods to estimate what the climate was like thousands of years ago. I found that 2023 is likely the hottest year going back at least 125,000. And yeah, that's caused a lot of extreme weather events this year, like or this past year, like heat waves, floods, wildfires, droughts, which did a lot of damage, caused a lot of hardship for governments and people alike. So yeah, this is not great news. We'll see how 2024 is, but likely not a good thing either. As scientists seem to be warning, that likely has a good chance of being another record-breaking.
Yeah. So, yeah.
There you go.
Fun times. Fun times. Oh, boy. But anyway, now to the other story that we all kind of knew was coming. We just wish we didn't. We're in that point where it's like, oh, crap, we're going to have, you know, the government's going to run out of money again soon. And we got to get a funding deal done before somebody torpedoes it for petty political reasons. You know the people. Unfortunately, congressional leaders, including current House Speaker Mike Johnson, agreed to a funding deal. And then a bunch of the assholes in the House GOP torpedoed it in protest of the agreement. Well, they did torpedo it. They torpedoed another related bill in protest because they just want to watch the world burn, I guess.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing you're not surprised about. Yeah, this is essentially continuing the previous agreement that had been reached between the Biden administration and Kevin McCarthy. And so they, you know, Mike Johnson, Chuck Schumer, and the Biden administration came together again and sort of agreed that they should keep doing that for the time being. But, you know, you got people like Chip Roy, among others, sort of throwing a fit because they weren't involved. And it's like, yeah, because you guys are children that do not know how to actually govern. Because they think if they can somehow get a shutdown, that'll be blamed on the Biden administration and it'll go bad for them. And it's like, this hasn't worked the last few times. It's not going to keep working in any way. So yeah, it's just a thing. And I think they, so the last agreement essentially split the deadlines into two, so that there was one coming up here on the 19th and then one in February. And so we're coming up here with a deal that needs to get done here by the end of next week. Or else some bad stuff's going to happen. Hopefully we got some people that are interested in not letting that happen, but we'll see. Because, yeah, they torpedoed this other bill as a procedural vote on an unrelated bill.
Yeah.
13 Republicans defected so that the vote failed 203-216. And so you had like Chip Roy, Bob Good of Virginia, Andy Biggs of Arizona, all voting no. Marjorie Taylor Greene complaining about stuff. So yeah, a lot of those kinds of people. So yeah, unsurprising, but hopefully we can get the adults in the room to get this stuff done.
Yeah, that's the hope anyway. But yeah, and now for that sort of other story we talked about. So Alaska Airlines, there was a flight that was due bound. I can't remember where it was supposed to be going. But midway through the flight, the door plug, you know, the thing that keeps the door from, keeps it closed while they're in midair, fell off and the freaking door blew off of the freaking airline. And it ended up like, obviously it scared the crap out of a bunch of people. It ended up sucking the shirt straight off of this kid, this young boy, like just right off of him. It was a scary freaking thing. And that all in itself is like, damn, that's crazy. And basically it made the, FAA like ground all of the, related planes. 'Cause this was like a 737 MAX 9. And it made them, you know, put all of them on the ground. And then it came out that Alaska Airlines and United Airlines, who also had like 737 MAX 9s, they also had loose parts. And now because of it, the FAA is getting ready to audit Boeing.
Yeah. Because Boeing in recent years has swapped CEOs from... Mm-hmm. You know, people are familiar with engineering and that kind of stuff to money people.
Yeah.
You know, who famously love to cut stuff that is important because it saves money. And that leads to things like the quality of the products they produce and that they get for their planes to nosedive quickly as a result. So, yeah, this was a flight coming out of Portland that not too long after it took off, this door plug flew off, left a big hole in the side of the plane that landed in a teacher's backyard. Luckily, nobody hurt there, as well as a couple of cell phones that flew out with it that were also found. They obviously returned back to Portland to figure out what all was going on and how that happened. And yeah, it seems like just poor production quality on these plugs and the planes themselves, cut corners, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, they grounded all of these planes for the time being so that they could get inspected and the FAA to kind of do a quick you know, oversight of all this and see like what the best step was for all this. So yeah, they're in the midst of tightening their oversight of Boeing and sort of making sure that they're not putting out faulty planes like this in the future. Luckily this one didn't involve any particular damage to you know, life or anything. Just scared a bunch of people for, you know, the short time they were up and landing. So luckily no disaster here, but that's the thing they'd like to avoid in the future. And we got, you know, a lot of these airlines that are famous for cutting corners themselves for that stuff. So yeah, we'll find out like exactly what all went on, but yeah, this is some wild stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That was a hell of a rabbit hole to fall down. But yeah, so next up, there's a private company that's planning to send the remains of people to the moon. But there's an issue. You see, they're getting protested by members of the Navajo Nation because apparently some of the remains of the people there belong to the Navajo tribe. And they may or may not have signed off on it. Yeah.
I don't think it's that. I think it's as they... They say here the moon is a sacred place in Navajo cosmology.
Ah.
The suggestion of transforming it into a resting place for human remains This is deeply disturbing and unacceptable to our people and many other tribal nations.
Yeah.
And sort of, maybe not that they're completely opposed to this, but it seems like something that they would like to be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
In some way, but the mission is not being run by NASA, but rather a private company. Mm. Let's see what they're called here. Peregrine Mission 1.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is the mission.
Yeah.
Let's see. Celestis and Elysium are the two companies mm-hmm. that are putting payloads featuring cremated remains of these people's loved ones into that want them put out into the cosmos on what are called memorial space flights.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a weird thing, but Celestis said it is sending the remains of nearly 70 people, as well as a DNA sample from the scientist and writer, mm-hmm. Sir Arthur C. Clarke.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's a weird thing. Famous for writing the screenplay of 2001 A Space Odyssey,
mm-hmm.
as well as the books behind that.
Yep.
There's more than one.
Yep, there's like three or four of them.
Yeah, but different years, in case you're wondering. Mm-hmm. Let's see. And of course, the CEOs of this company interested in religious objection for that. Yeah, he said he believed religious objection shouldn't be permitted to derail humanity's endeavors in space, that the company's clients consider their memorial space flights mm-hmm. an appropriate celebration of the polar opposite of desecration. Which mm-hmm. is like, I guess, but this is also a very weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting people's cremated remains on the moon when we already got one planet to pollute, much less doing that to the moon for whatever the purpose of this stuff is. So, and yeah, this is just a weird situation. I understand
mm-hmm.
The Navajo Nation side. I don't know that they necessarily should be like a policing this stuff, but I definitely understand their viewpoints here. So yeah, that's a weird thing.
Yeah. Next up, we now found out that ESPN, Chris, did you ever watch ESPN?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did if you were a sports person, because that's what ESPN is. Yeah. And it was revealed this week that for more than a decade, ESPN managed to secure Emmys for its on-air talent by using fake names.
Yeah, this is a whole weird scheme mm-hmm. that potentially goes even longer than that, but ESPN says they have disciplined members of its staff who worked for years mm-hmm. to secure Emmys for on-air personnel who are not normally eligible for the awards by using fake names and entering them in various categories.
Mm-hmm.
The probe found that ESPN has for more than a decade inserted mm-hmm. fake personnel names and entries to win more than 30 Emmys, then took the awards, removed the fraudulent nameplates, and had the statues engraved mm-hmm. anew so they could be given to on-air staff, which includes people like Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso, Chris Fowler, Desmond mm-hmm. Howard, and Samantha Ponder. And much of it seems centered around their College Game Day show, which was sort of a big show they do on Saturdays before college football games are played, kind of stuff. As the ESPN put here in a statement, some members of our team were clearly wrong in submitting certain names that may go back to 1997 in Emmy categories where they were not eligible for recognition or statuettes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a misguided attempt to recognize on-air individuals who are important members of our production. Mm-hmm. Once current leadership was made aware, we apologized to NETES, which is the association that runs the Emmys, for violating guidelines and work closely with them to completely overhaul our submission process to safeguard against mm-hmm. anything like this happening again. Let's see, ESPN said outside attorneys were brought in to investigate the matter, and individuals found mm-hmm. responsible were disciplined by ESPN. So yeah. Yeah, they found a credit list for the years the College Game Day show won, and it found in each of the 7 years, which is 2010, 2011, 2014, 2015, 16, 17, 18,
mm-hmm.
names similar to those of on-air personalities with identical initials were created and identified as associate producers of the show. So like Kirk Henry for Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Clarke for Lee Corso, Dirk Howard for Desmond Howard, and such. So, yeah, kind of just a weird whole scheme that, yeah, it seems like NETES discovered this whole thing, figured out what was going on. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Weird old situation. Kind of just shitty in the end because it took away the opportunity for real people to win these awards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know if they're going to figure out how to deal with that, if other people will win those, get those instead. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And next up, Steamboat Willie, the, like I said, the first Disney Mickey Mouse sound cartoon is now officially in the public domain, which means you can use pretty much any of the assets from that film, but it cannot in any way be connected to Disney's modern IPs. And even then, you know, Disney is still like striking down stuff of it in YouTube, though that might just be the automated thing happening. I don't know. But yeah, so Steamboat Willie is now public domain, and that means we're going to get a bunch of shitty Steam games and horror movies out of it.
Yeah, we'll show you one later.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go on the internet database and get a copy of this if you want for your own collection. If you did not find a means for getting it otherwise beforehand, but yeah, it's, you know, it's not Mickey Mouse. It's this specific version of Mickey Mouse in black and white, essentially. So yeah, this is not like, not really even like the Winnie the Pooh stuff, which that was a like full version of Winnie the Pooh outside of the specific version that sort of Disney started using after what's in the original books for that stuff. So yeah. So yeah, that's gonna lead to a lot of weird stuff, and that's not a character that's necessarily as easily used for stuff, but I've seen like somebody's doing a web comic essentially as a sequel to that short. So that's some of the neat stuff you can get.
Yeah.
But you can also get other people just trying to make a quick buck off of it. So
yeah. Next up. Yeah. So yeah, that's happening, and we're definitely going to get a bunch, just an inundation of shitty Steamboat Willie content until, you know, the good stuff rises up and all the crap disappears. But until then, just prepare yourself, 'cause the memes are coming. next up, George Carlin was one of the greatest comedians who ever lived. He passed away back in 2008, and he was so good that even today we still find like old pieces of his that remain incredibly relevant, even years after his death. But he recently had a new comedy special come out called I'm Glad I'm Dead. It was created via AI that synthesizes George Carlin's voice into new material. And as you can imagine, his daughter and remaining family are not happy with it.
Yeah. So yeah, this was created by Dudesy, a comedy AI that hosts a podcast and YouTube show with Mad TV alum Will Sasso and podcaster Chad Kultgen. It's an hour-long special. They essentially ran through a bunch of his content and created something that, from what I've heard, feels like George Carlin without the soul.
Yeah,
to it. Whereas, you know, obviously not as good as the way he normally talks and the way he would write things, but they try and do like as close to this, but did this without the family's consent. His daughter has been on Twitter putting out a statement saying, let's see, my dad spent a lifetime perfecting his craft from his very human life, brain, and imagination. No machine will ever replace his genius. These AI-generated products are clever attempts at trying to recreate a mind that will never exist again. Let's let the artist's work speak for itself. Humans are so afraid of the void that we can't let what has fallen into it stay there. She also continued, here's an idea. How about we give some actual living human comedians to listen to? But if you want to listen to the genuine George Carlin, he has 14 specials that you can find anywhere.
Yep. And every single one of them is worth watching.
Yeah.
Because the dude was just... The dude never missed.
Yeah, he did a good job covering like political stuff in an era where that was in a common topic.
Yeah. And he, obviously he wasn't perfect. He was very much a man of his time, but in other ways he was shockingly forward thinking in ways that a lot of us find hard to comprehend. But yeah, just watch all of them. Watch the last one he did if you want to start, the one he, his most recent one, because that one was legitimately hilarious. The one he did like a year or so after 9/11 happened, that one was really deep and cutting. But yeah, so don't listen to this piece of crap. Watch the actual George Carlin. He was actually really good.
Yeah, and also check out, you know, actual comedians that are waiting for people to check them out.
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, they would like your interest more than these people trying to profit off of a dead man who has not consented, nor has his family consented to any of
them. Yeah. But anyway, we're moving on now to the entertainment portion of the show. Where we'll be talking about some streaming and some trailers. First and foremost, Oppenheimer will be streaming on Peacock starting February 16th.
Yeah. I'll be able to check it out against Christopher Nolan's wishes.
Mm-hmm.
That it should only be watched in a theater.
Yeah.
For that. So, yeah, that'll be nice to see. Yeah, 3 hours. That's a lot for a movie. Especially one about this kind of topic, but I'm looking forward to it. I guess I'll also have some other Nolan movies in there. The Batman stuff, Dunkirk, Inception. Yeah. Definitely watch like Memento and see just how it's a weird framing of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of essentially recording a bunch of scenes and then playing them in the opposite.
Yeah.
As the framing of a man who lost his memory and is slowly figuring out what happened.
Yeah. So yeah, next up, Disney confirmed that there will be a season 2 for Ahsoka, so that's good.
Yeah. I'll have to finish that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I started, didn't finish it, not for really any reason, just did not finish it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'll be interesting to check out, see where that's going. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And they also announced that there's going to be a Mandalorian and Grogu. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. That'll be weird to see a movie out of that, but curious to see how that does. I think they're doing another season. Then the movie might be set after that. We'll see how that goes. It's probably pretty early in production at the moment. So might be a couple years off for that. So yeah, there you go.
So that's happening. And we also found out that What We Do in the Shadows will be ending with season 6.
Yeah, they're kind of reaching a point of either just doing more kind of aimless stuff or, you know, ending on a good note with the way that the last season went to kind of reset things a little bit. But yeah, looking forward to that. I assume that'll be out either later this year or early next year. We'll have to see, but yeah, I like them being able to end on their own terms versus the way things go for other shows. So yeah, there you go.
Yep. And in somewhat sad news, Max has canceled Our Flag Means Death after 2 seasons.
Yeah. That's a show that's been pretty popular as sort of a pirate comedic show. Is ending after 2 seasons, even though the creators basically said, you know, they'd like it to only go about 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So they get cut short on for that. So yeah, that's disappointing for the people that like that show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get to work on something else that'll be maybe do better. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's another Taika Waititi show. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And now we got some trailers. We got an official trailer for Netflix's adaptation of Si Jin Liu's novel, The Three-Body Problem.
Yeah. This trailer makes a bit more sense.
Yep, slightly.
There's some weird stuff going on that threatens humanity.
Yeah.
Dealing with decisions made, you know, decades earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of reverberates through to the present day.
Yep.
Of this show, so.
Yeah.
That looks neat.
And it's going to be interesting to see because the novel, I've read the book, and the original book actually begins during arguably, it's honestly kind of amazing the book got published at all, because the book starts, like, literally begins during the Cultural Revolution, which is a very, very sensitive topic in China, as you can probably imagine. And it literally, it starts with this girl basically watching a bunch of Red Guards humiliate her father during one of those quote-unquote struggle sessions. And it goes on from there. But essentially, it's an alien invasion story, but it's a very unusual alien invasion story. And like the whole, like the way that like time works in these books, that like time is still, you know, still works normally, but like the just immense amount of time that passes in these stories, from decades to centuries to even millennia. It's some crazy shit, but it's really good. So I'm hoping that this adaptation can do it justice.
Yeah. And won't have to wait too long, about 2 months. It'll be premiering on Netflix March 20th. That'll be fun to see how that goes. And you can definitely tell this is from, like, Game of Thrones people, because there's a few actors there that were in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as well as the guy that does Wong in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. See him get sort of a prominent role in a big show.
And we also got an official trailer for season 2 of Paramount Plus's Halo adaptation.
Yeah, it seems like the season where Master Chief is going to fight a lot of aliens, so that's probably pretty good.
Yep, that's the plot.
Yeah. I have not watched the first season. They did put all of it on YouTube, so I managed to grab that, so I'll probably watch it. Though I know that he has some out-of-suit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is including having sex, so that's a weird thing to do, but luckily they're getting to do a second season and doing some actual combat stuff and getting to show some of the cool parts of that franchise. So yeah, that could be pretty neat. That starts February 8th on Paramount Plus. Yeah, 2 episodes at the premiere and a new episode every Thursday until March 21st. So yeah, there you go.
And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Mickey's Mousetrap. Yeah, remember when we said how the Steamboat Willie going into public domain meant there was going to be a bunch of terrible crap that's going to come out of it? Well, here you go.
Yeah. But this isn't like the Winnie the Pooh movie. This seems like it is a horror comedy where these people at this amusement park that are stuck there are getting picked off one by one by a masked killer who's dressing as, you know, Steamboat Willie, Mickey Mouse. So it's an actual person who is dressed like or in a big suit like that, which may not even be really a suit. May just be the mask is sort of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of your typical kind of slasher thing, though. From what I saw in the trailer, the characters are somewhat aware of how, you know, horror tropes. I'm like, oh, here's the character that says, I'll be back. That means they won't be back. This was a horror movie. All that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, okay. It seems like a fairly cheap movie, so maybe it'll do decently well. But I don't know that it's going to be anything to write home about. But
yeah, this seems to be the trend now when, like, big, you know, cultural stuff goes public domain, we end up getting these shitty horror movies. Like, this happened after Winnie the Pooh went public domain and that god-awful Winnie the Pooh and Piglet horror movie came out.
Yeah.
And now we got this, so I'm pretty sure, like, they specifically, like, start production on these movies, like, weeks before the copyright expires, just so they can already have these things ready to go as soon as the clock strikes midnight.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yeah, we got ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. Because, you know, we're everywhere. And if you somehow find a podcast aggregator that we have not gotten onto yet, just, you know, go get something to eat and maybe take a shower. We'll be there when you come back. We're about as inevitable as, you know, these shitty horror movies from formerly copyrighted properties going public domain. But anyway, so yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to talk about us to your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, and your mortal enemies and everyone in between, because they may end up hating you, but they may like us. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Thank you once again, Chris, to joining me tonight, and hopefully, barring another sudden outbreak of fire, we will be seeing you all next week. So we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.